Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Media Project is here for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and if we are extremely lucky, a bit of insight into the media issues of the week. Good day to you all. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany, here in the studios of WAMC with Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hello, sir. Rex. Good to be back.
Wonderful to see you, sir. And next to me is Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. Hello.
Hello. It is great to be here.
We don't allow dead air around here, you know. We interrupt each other rather than allow dead air. So, you know, Dr. Shartok's not here, but we are going to valiantly labor on. And those of you who tune in just to hear Alan will have to make do with those of us who are left in his vacation wake. So here we are. And of course, there hasn't been any news at all since we last sat for these microphones.
It's nervous time even talking about anything, because as we speak, between the time when we're here recording this and the time it airs, the whole world could be upside down. It's unbelievable. I'm crawling under my bed at 5 o'clock at night now, because apparently at between 5 and 6 each afternoon, something earth-shattering is released or reported.
Absolutely. Who is one of the Washington correspondents referred to the week past as the longest week in history?
And that was on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's kind of amazing.
Do you agree? I heard the commentary by a couple of reporters on one of the shows where they're all in boxes like the Hollywood Squares, and they were saying that Trump is a reporter's dream, that he generates so much news that this chaos, etc., is good for them and good for the business.
And it may not be good for the country. I often think that this is the new golden age of journalism, which makes it sound like the press is benefiting from the chaos that's happening at the national level. But it truly is showing the value of the press. Mm-hmm.
It is. I think you're exactly right. And I'm sure there's a business benefit. You know, the New York Times added more than 300,000 digital subscribers in the first quarter of this year. Financial Times reports that The Guardian, which has had a lot of financial struggles, now gets as much revenue from readers as it does from advertising. And that's just because people have to pay more attention to the news because more is going on.
It just seems like these reporters, not just seems like, I'm sure it's the case, it's like they're in this race every day and more stuff keeps happening, and every once in a while they've got to stop, you know, and then they continue on. There's been no break coming out of that White House.
Yeah, one of the GIFs I retweeted showed Lucy and Ethel from the old Lucy Ricardo show stuffing chocolates in their mouth and saying,
oh, yeah.
This is the Washington Post and the New York Times reporters now. They're just going as fast as they can. They can't keep up with the chocolates coming.
But it is really remarkable, the journalism that those two newspapers in particular have displayed. It's just, they obviously both have a lot of resources on this story, but they are really, really proving the worth of journalism.
And it's nice to see the revenue flow into the Washington Post, The Guardian, and The New York Times, but will it flow into our local papers, and will local people start to see the value of journalism, and will that subscriber base grow enough to offset the losses in advertising?
That's a very good question. Whether the overall interest in the news that's coming out of Washington will translate into people thinking they need news generally. You know, one of the most encouraging signs for the long-term future that I've seen is that the new academic standards approved by the Board of Regents tentatively to replace the Common Core include a provision that schools not be evaluated just on the basis of math and ELA, English Language Arts scores, but also on the basis of science and citizenship, in effect, social studies. And therefore, there is going to be training for students in civics the way that there used to be that has to be at a certain level for the schools to be considered successful. And that, I think, if you're going to teach students citizenship, you have to teach them to be smart news consumers so that they can exercise the duties of citizenship. That's a really good sign for the long term.
Do right? you remember either of you having civics classes? Because
I don't.
Sure. Yeah? Well, I must have skipped school that day.
But. Well, you were probably advanced because they rushed you through school.
Right, that must be it.
I've been on some fake news panels lately, and this issue comes up. And it said, you know, people from the audience say, are they teaching the kids nowadays to discern, fact from fiction, to understand where bias is? The schools have been under such pressure to teach the Common Core that they haven't had time to do news literacy. Let's hope they get back to that a little bit.
Danger, though, that actually Rosemary Armeo, our now departed colleague from this. She's
still alive.
Departed only to Sarajevo, last we heard. But Rosemary raised this point. Actually, I was on one of those panels with Rosemary, and she said, I worry, she said, what happens when they start teaching news literacy in Texas with... due respect, I'm a former Texan, but it is too bad that the fact of the matter is you don't necessarily trust the folks who make the curriculum in some places to make a fair and accurate assessment of the value of news to citizenship.
Well, what really is complicating it, and I'm not saying anything that others have already said, is that the cultural divide in this country, the wider expanse of media, so that you have what is generally called a right-wing media and a left-wing media or a mainstream media, so you can take any one of these Trump stories from any day of the week and watch that story on CNN or MSNBC and get a story and then turn the channel to Fox and hear an entirely different story from an entirely different point of view. And so the question is, how does the public settle on what is news and what is the correct story and what isn't when they're colored by their own biases? They're going into that, they're turning on Fox wanting to hear what Fox is telling them.
Yeah, I know people consume news differently, and not everyone is an avid reader, but I still believe it's a bias on my part that reading is the best way to get a good sense of what's happening.
But you have, for example, a picture I saw this week, a still picture of Hannity on the air. Behind him, the graphic said, Washington Post, wrong again. But it wasn't wrong again, but they just flat out say it that way.
There's some discussion about morning where we're talking about when we get to the root of the Russian interference in U.S. elections. And one senator was suggesting that we all need to cooperate when we get leaked information that comes from nefarious sources like Russian WikiLeaks, and that maybe the press ought to cooperate and not report these things. No, I don't think we want to go there. The press did repeat the information from WikiLeaks, but in every case, it was a legitimate news story.
That's right. There was smart editing going on by those organizations that received WikiLeaks information. Not everything was passed along. The major media that have national security reporters that report some of these things, which is differentiated from those of us in the local media sphere, they do frequently make decisions not to publish stuff they consider too sensitive. In fact, there's some reality to the notion that reporters are more careful about handling national security issues than President Trump has been, because the media alone are trying to make sure that what is reported is fully accurate. And a lot of stuff we saw the president passing along information, apparently, to Russia, that I don't think would have been published in an American newspaper if they had it in hand.
And the craziness of this was that the press started to be attacked for reporting that news, when in fact, a week before, the president had told Russia, and Russia likely had told Iran. I mean, the people who were in danger knew this. The press reported it, withheld important details like what city it was in, when in fact the president reportedly did say what city. It was a crucial piece of information. The press was very responsible in that case, and it showed that we don't report everything we know.
Notwithstanding that, the president tweeted, "This is the greatest single witch hunt of a politician in American history." And he goes back to his predecessors. He tweets, "With all the illegal acts that took place in the Clinton campaign and Obama administration, there was never a special counsel appointed." Misspelling the word, looking at the tweet here. But, of course, there were special counsel appointed in those administrations. And multiple congressional investigations of Mrs. Clinton. Remember Benghazi? 9 committees, I think, looked into that. So I think that it's a shame that the president is so
You know, he doesn't like to be criticized, and he doesn't like critics. It's just like we all dealt with people who criticize us every day, but you don't get defensive when.
Well, you know, the White House put out a statement after the naming of Mueller as a special counsel, and it was a rather statesmanlike kind of statement, and welcoming the investigation, etc. And then the next morning, this morning as we speak, Trump puts out this tweet about it being a witch hunt, which says a couple of things. One is he obviously didn't read or didn't understand what the White House had put out. And secondly, he is still on the loose with Twitter. If I may, we're just learning as we're recording the program. I was just looking to see if I can get confirmation that Roger Ailes has died. And of course, I was talking earlier about Fox News. He is the architect, man behind the curtain at Fox News. Interestingly, the first report of his death was on the Drudge Report, which gave me reason for pause. But there is a statement from his wife that confirms Roger Ailes' death. And I don't know, maybe you two guys want to talk more about what the impact that this guy has had on the media.
It's huge, you know, when you consider the fact that this is a guy who was a political operative who was given this opportunity by Rupert Murdoch to fashion a TV channel. And what he did was create the first major media outlet in this country with an intentional political bias. And it has changed the complexion of American journalism because Fox News is, as Judy was just saying, very different. If you tune into Fox News on a given evening, you will get a completely different sense of what's going on than you get from any other news outlet. It is the outlier. But many people get their news only from Fox News. And I think it has led to a more contentious, partisan country. I think it's had a tremendous, I would say, negative impact on how Americans relate to the news and to each other, in fact.
You know, sometimes I tune into Fox or I look at their website and I go, didn't they see the news? Where's the story?
I know.
And it's true that a lot of people do rely on Fox. And even after the departure of Ailes, it's carried on. It's well established. It's not going to change. Sometimes you see some moderation in some of the hosts. But I think it gives all of cable news a bad.
Well, I was going to ask. I mean, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I happen to agree with what you're starting to say. But let's just for the sake of argument say, did Ailes, we know he did because of the success of Fox News, but Ailes recognized that the conservative voice was not being heard as loudly as he and many people thought it should be, and established a platform for that to happen. Do we give him credit for doing that, or do we say, yes, it was necessary for there to be a conservative voice, but he went way overboard and the network has gone way overboard? How will he be remembered, well or not well?
I don't know that I agree with the contention that the conservative voice wasn't being heard. I think that news was being reported in a straightforward way. And what he did was to put a twist, a bias on it. In response to that, you know, we have MSNBC putting a liberal twist on their stuff now. And by the way, liberal conservative does not break down actually now into pro-Trump, anti-Trump, because an awful lot of conservatives are anti-Trump. You know, Rush Limbaugh has changed the language he uses. He used to have what he called the Limbaugh School of Advanced Conservative Studies, I think is what he called it, is one of his little gimmicks that he would use on the air, one of his memes. And he's now changed it to the Limbaugh School of Advanced Anti-Left Studies.
Well, yeah. Did you last week discuss Charlie Sykes's column in the New York Times where he described the atmosphere now as the conservatives are anti-Trump.
Right.
They're not necessarily backing Trump, but they're against anybody who does denounce Trump. And they do that not by discussing the issues, but by making fun of a Maxine Waters, a congresswoman who's very pro-liberal, et cetera. And that seems to be the atmosphere. So when you say they're not all conservatives like Trump, I think that's clear, but they are not standing up against Trump.
Well, no, I think conservative commentators are. I mean, if you look at even the Wall Street Journal editorial page and you look at traditionally conservative columnists like David Brooks of the New York Times and even Bret Stephens in his subsequent columns in the New York Times now, these are not supporters of Donald Trump because in many ways, Trump is not a conservative. You can't say what he is.
But it has not yet seemed to impact his base. The 40% or so who are like Trump are sticking with Trump.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about is thoughtful conservative discussion, and what you're not getting that on Fox News. You're getting personality attacks. You're getting hyperbole. You're getting entertainment. It's disguised as news commentary.
So if you're just joining us, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith here with Judy Patrick and Ira Fussfeld from WAMC in Albany. And by the way, if you want to offer your thoughts, we will share them with readers in the next show. We are media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org, and you can let us know what you're thinking. To follow up on what you were just saying, I wonder if the harsh anti-media rhetoric that has pervaded the White House is going to have any effect on Fox News and on anybody else. If people don't trust the media, I think that has to carry through to those who are even the president's pals, like at Fox and Friends, I would think. People would begin to mistrust everything. And the president, apparently, there's a report that says that when he was in this important face-to-face meeting with Comey that ultimately led to Comey's ouster in the Oval Office, he said that Mr. Comey should consider putting reporters in prison for publishing classified information. You know, when... For one thing, he seems to not understand the process, that the FBI director doesn't put anybody in prison in this country. That's not the way it works here.
Or the Constitution.
Yes.
But he's playing to the uneducated.
Yeah.
I'm going to be curious to see in the next few days, in the wake of this appointment of Mueller as a special counsel, which, as we speak, has been widely praised by Republicans and Democrats alike. I'm going to be interested to see how the Limbaughs and the Hannitys play this on their air,
mm-hmm.
because if they're going to be try to be objective and say, okay, we've got a counsel who everybody seems to agree is a good, honest broker. Let's see where his investigation goes. That's going to be much more valuable to the health of this country than if they immediately start saying, well, here we go. That's the deep state. They've picked up an old FBI director. And I'm going to tell you now, this is a witch hunt, as Trump said. And if that's what their message is going to be, regardless of how the investigation comes out, it's going to throw doubt and continue to maintain the gulf, the philosophical gulf in this country.
Yeah, and as much as the appointment of Mueller has been widely praised, I'm a little concerned about this whole investigation going underground and the public not knowing anything that's happening for the next 6 months to a year.
And you're not a member of the alt-right. So if the alt-right would say that vociferously, look, they're gonna railroad him. It's all being done underground.
In my position is the public has a right to know a lot of these details. And special counsels do not typically like to show their laundry out in public.
I think that's absolutely right. And he's bound to have, since he's a real, Mueller's known as a real by-the-numbers kind of a guy, he will probably crack down hard on any leaking. It is unlike the administration, where there is no loyalty to anybody anywhere up or down the chain. And that's why you see so many leaks coming out of the White House. Mm-hmm. That's why we know so much about what goes on in there, because everybody feels as though they are they're free to do whatever they want.
Well, and I'm also hoping that the people are leaking because they're saying to themselves, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. This shouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, the animosity to the press that we're seeing coming out of Washington is not a new thing, really. It traces back. I'm reading an essay from from Quartz, I believe, in which people talk about Alexander Hamilton's political sex scandal. A woman named Maria Reynolds, who Alexander Hamilton paid her husband to keep the relationship secret, but it was exposed by a pamphleteer named Callender, James Callender. And we know, of course, that Thomas Jefferson, his relationship with his slave, Sally Hemings, was actually exposed in the 19th century. So these things are not unusual in terms of the American press angering public officials, exposing what goes on behind the scenes that they wish to have unseen. What is different is that we now have in the White House somebody who seems to be willing to curtail First Amendment liberties that have guaranteed a free press, and it could have long-term implications. I think that the most unpatriotic thing that the president is doing is undermining the First Amendment by attacking the very foundation of our right to do this kind of report.
Well, he's clearly laid groundwork for himself whether he is impeached or whether he is not reelected or whatever, he has already laid the groundwork to blame it on largely on the press. That at the end of the day, if he suffers a defeat, it will not be his fault. It was because the press went after him, unlike anybody else. By the way, we're all old enough to remember the Watergate era, and Ron Ziegler, the presidential press secretary, behind the podium at those briefings, which of course in those days were not televised live, but we saw a lot of stories and newsreels about them, constantly saying the Washington Post stories was wrong and this story was wrong, and they're lying and they're lying. Much like we're hearing today. And then that's the position that they're going to take until proven otherwise.
Right. And other presidents as recently as Obama have not been especially cooperative with the press, but they always had an underlying respect for the process, I was thinking. This one where he reportedly asked Comey to start jailing reporters or to consider it, he clearly thinks that that's possible or that he can make that happen. It's almost like he doesn't have a fundamental understanding of how the Constitution or government works.
Although we saw in the Obama, you alluded to it, Obama behind the microphone was very much First Amendment and we admire the job you do. But behind the scenes, he was very much a champion of anti-press measures. He tried to, was it James Risen, the reporter, he tried to put in prison for not revealing sources. So, it's not just the Republicans and it's not just the real far right wing who's had these issues.
Well, let's talk for just a minute here as we get towards the end of the program about those anonymous sources. You know, there is this unusual situation where we have anonymous sources revealing what went on in the president's meeting with the Russians. And then we have H.R. McMaster, the national security advisor, going out in front of the microphones the next day saying the story that came out tonight as reported is false. He says, I was there. It didn't happen the way the story says. So a question is this. H.R. McMaster is there on the record saying this. It takes extraordinary trust in the integrity of the Washington Post and its editors to say we believe their unnamed sources rather than believe General McMaster, doesn't it?
And the denials that McMaster offered were for things that were not in the story. He said something, they did it wrong, but they didn't do it wrong. He didn't refer to the core of the story, which some people speculate that was why he came to the podium the next day at the briefing to say what 10 times the story was wholly inappropriate.
Mr. Trump said was wholly appropriate.
Right. Which can be parsed in and of itself.
Yeah. The New York Times reported with a similar article. He was asked, "Are you sure?" He says, "I don't put it in. We don't put it in the newspaper unless we're sure." Mm-hmm. It comes from the discipline of checking your sources, knowing where the information is coming, embedding it, talking to your editors. That's what the infrastructure of journalism does.
Well, and with that, we're going to have to call it a day. So we hope that you've appreciated the Media Project this week. Ira Fussfeld, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us. Next week, we'll see you on the Media Project.
She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments. She stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Judy Patrick is the editor of the Daily Gazette. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.